You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Hello, welcome please to Telstra Customer Service. How may I be helping you?
Conform or be consumed.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history.
I heard a rumour today.
I like your rumours.
I know, as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school. How can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
What is your environmental policy?
To sell Telstra.
You heard of road rage?
Yes.
What about web rage?
And within a few minutes.
Minutes.
Yeah, minutes. It's not minutes. Next year, mate.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, this is Tech Talk Radio and I'm your host Andrew McComb. It's been just over a month since the launch of Microsoft's new flagship operating system, Windows Vista. And as time passes, more and more of the strange ways of the Microsoft juggernaut are beginning to surface. This week, conspiracy theorists will have a field day over the new copy protection system built into the new operating system. If Microsoft's track record with Zune is anything to go by, then this debacle will no doubt anger many of us who aren't in the least bit interested in becoming pirates on the high seas of DVD replication. This time, Microsoft seems to be future-proofing itself in the distribution of high-quality media. When you're on 90% of the world's computers, it's blatantly obvious that you can influence other companies. And this time, movie houses and media companies in how to distribute their content. Let's face it, the days of the video library are numbered and more of us are turning to online vendors for news and entertainment. And mainly because we all live busy lives and we want our news and movies delivered to us when we want. Another doozy to rear its head is Microsoft's new policy to not allow purchasers of Vista upgrade DVDs to do a clean install. Let's face it, the preferred method of loading up a new operating system is what we call a clean install. That is, delete everything on your hard drive and start again. This way you won't have rogue files on your system which may not be compatible with your new operating system. What's Microsoft thinking? If nothing else, it'll increase calls to their support line tenfold. But like everything in this field, there are workarounds, and this problem is no different. And we'll tell you how later in the show.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Take a guess at what the top 10 search phrases are on Google, and I'll bet you'll be so far off the money you won't believe it. Today, we reveal just what everyone's been looking for on the world's biggest and best search engine. Smaller screens and shorter attention spans will change the way media groups make their content, according to MTV Australia, as the music channel prepares to rev up its internet offering. Telstra will show up to 4 games of AFL live on mobile phones. Our guest today is Anton van der Meer. Anton will join the panel to discuss the latest communications gadgets with the traveller in mind. So, just how seamless is travelling overseas with your mobile or PDA? And Dr. Ron takes a look at the current state of play in the high-definition DVD and Blu-ray arena. The big questions: have the manufacturers learnt anything from the mass rollout of new technologies in the past? And are we going to see a repeat of the VHS and Beta fiascos of the 70s? All that and more on Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio. But first, let's find out what's been making news in the tech world this week.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Telstra steps up its campaign for less regulation, Hutchison flags cheaper mobile broadband, MTV Australia ramps up its web content, Telstra's $170 million spree brings footy to your phone, and YouTube banned on Victorian school computers. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Telstra has stepped up its campaign for less regulation, saying Australians should not accept lower speed broadband. The carrier has urged the public to pressure the federal government and the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission via talkback radio, community meetings, and phone calls to MPs. Executive Phil Burgess has told the Queensland Media Club it is just a coincidence the campaign has been launched in an election year. He says federal rules are blocking the full rollout of high-speed telecommunications.
We have a broadband drought in this country because we have an addiction to regulation. And that addiction to regulation is stunting investment. We're whistling past the graveyard. We've done it on water and finally woken up. We've done it on global warming and people are waking up. They've got to wake up on telecommunications because we're headed in the wrong direction, and we're headed in that direction because regulation addicts can't get over their need to tell everybody how to run things.
Mr. Burgess went on to say that today we have a Minister for Communications who says there's no reason why we should be too concerned about broadband. After all, 80% of the people can get 8 megabytes. But, said Mr. Burgess, 8 megabytes was not enough. Third-generation mobile operator Hutchison will launch a new service it promises will offer mobile broadband with fixed-line-style pricing by the end of March. The news came as the company announced its full-year results for 2006. Hutchison ended the year with a huge $759 million net loss, taking its total losses since starting in 1999 to nearly $2.7 billion. The company also said it would announce details of its planned capital restructure within the next few weeks. Hutchison's full-year revenue grew 15.6% to $1.1 billion, but the net loss ballooned 39% over the 2005 result, due mainly to costs attributed to shutting down the second-generation Orange CDMA network. Hutchison Chief Executive Nigel Dewes said the new X-Series service, which is already available in Britain, would offer pricing similar to that of fixed-line broadband services. Smaller screens and shorter attention spans will change the way media groups make their content, according to the boss of MTV Australia, David Sibley. 26 years after the music network hit US televisions with its first clip, Video Killed the Radio Star, by the Buggles, the cable TV icon is looking to ensure the boom in web content doesn't spell its slide into irrelevance. MTV Australia launches a free access broadband channel this month, following similar moves by the network's North American and European operations last year. The premium web service, called Overdrive, will stream clips, news, live music, movies and content from Australia and overseas through an embedded player on its website. The channel will also stream to 3G mobile phone services through local carriers. David Sibley, MTV Australia's Managing Director, expects traffic to the network's Overdrive site, pitched primarily at 16 to 29-year-olds, to double within the next 6 months. MTV is considered one of the first platforms to deliver content in bite-sized chunks, with its original service in 1981 largely featuring a run of 4-minute video clips, essentially a televised version of Top 40 radio. Some sociologists in the 1980s and 90s blamed the service for rearing an apathetic class of youth with a very short attention span, popularly known as the MTV generation. Telstra will show up to 4 games of AFL live on mobile phones and hopes to also screen rugby league games on handsets after it finalised an online digital media and sponsorship package across 3 sports networks. The final piece in the telecommunications giant's aggressive pitch for fixed internet and mobile phone sports content will be unveiled within days when Telstra announces a sponsorship and media rights deal with the National Rugby League worth about $90 million. The deal, which has taken months to negotiate, became bogged down in details over new technology, including the latest mobile broadcast methods, which are yet to be made commercially available in Australia. And Australian IT reports that popular internet website YouTube will be banned from computers in Victoria's 1,600 public schools in a bid to clamp down on bullying. Education Services Minister Jacinta Allen said last week that the move would also ensure students were using school computers to access age-appropriate material relevant to the curriculum and their learning needs. The Minister said the schools and their ISPs already filtered websites that were available to students, and YouTube would be added to a list of blocked sites. The move comes after a video featuring a degrading attack on a teenage girl, filmed by teenage students in Werribee, was uploaded to YouTube last year. The minister said that Victorian government had never tolerated bullying in schools, and that this zero-tolerance approach extended to the online world. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Security is becoming the big issue in technology. Radio spectrum is a finite supply. That's exactly
right.
Not
only finite, but very precious.
There is no doubt that we need to do better here with broadband, and we have a plan to achieve that.
Did you hear about the hoax SMS that was sent out to about 10,000 people last Friday night in Melbourne?
Very annoying to know that you've given your SMS, your phone number, to an organisation like Connex, and then to find that it's being misused
exactly.
by people like that.
We haven't even started that yet in Australia, and there is a lead time. It takes quite some time to get these networks built.
This thing.
better than Blay Bay.
Don't buy a cheap set-top box.
That's competition. That's what it's about. No but regulation and competition comes
why
in.
Why not turn it on to the consumers to which they can
Telstra
supply it?
Supposedly is forced to then resell their
But they're
hardware
not forced there. To. ADSL2 is unregulated.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy. It's child's play.
Podcasting's so easy, even my little brother can do it.
Step one, download and install some podcatching software, like iTunes. Step two, find the address of the Tech Talk Radio podcast feed on the Tech Talk Radio website. Step three, copy and paste the feed address into your podcatching software, and you're done. Now every week, you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever, and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn, on a train, in a car, on a plane, at work.
Poor Carl is charging Charlie Christie.
Showtime.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb for yet another interesting week in tech. And it certainly has been, again, this week. There's lots been happening. Our friends at Telstra have been at it again. The ACMA have been at it, this time in relation to television and should we regulate soapies. It's been all, yes, amazing. And, of course, Microsoft's news this week. Have you heard? Welcome, Graham. He's here this evening. And Mark's here. Dr. Ron?
Missing in action again.
Missing in action. Don't know. He's done a runner, but nonetheless. Thank you to everyone who actually rang us during the course of the week. It was very good. We had a few interesting calls about the topics we had on last week, and we're going to have a bit of a recap in just a moment. But before we do that, Graham, what's news? Anything exciting this week?
Well, lots of news this week. Not much. Not much going on that I've been involved in, I'm afraid.
Oh, really? You've had a quiet week, have you?
Had a quiet weekend, yeah.
Well, that's got to be pretty good in a lot of respects. If you're in the IT world and you've had a quiet week, it means everything's working, doesn't it? Because normally you only get busy when the customers complain.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Well, that's good. Mark, how's your week been?
Work-wise, chasing mystery call drops, but let's forget about that for a minute.
Mystery call drops, what, people running around hitting the end button?
Let's forget about that for a minute. Just sweep them under the carpet. Don't worry about those.
Hang on. Settle down, you guys. You did the last week's.
No, we don't sweep them under the carpet. I just don't like to talk about them.
Oh.
Just more boring work, you know.
No,
that's the interesting part sometimes, actually, to chase them down and find out what's
fault finding is always a good exercise, isn't it?
Keeps you busy, keeps you interested in the job. Yeah, that's right. And gets you out of the office.
I would have thought
that
fault finding radio frequency issues would be just a nightmare because never is the environment the same. Like, it's not a control environment where you can test.
Actually, funny you should mention that, because today I was out in the field and I had this bit of test equipment with an antenna on it, and everyone's giving me these strange looks, and people are going, what's on the television and all that sort of stuff, you know? So I thought, oh, yeah, that's a bit strange. And this guy walked
out. Did you say to them, go inside and lock the children?
Yeah.
I mean, lock the house and...
Don't need to concern yourself. Walk back inside,
exactly.
Lock the doors, and don't. No, I didn't use that line. That's been used by friends of ours, and no, I don't use that line. That's not good for business. No, I was just standing there, and this guy walks out of the shop while I'm there, and he goes, "What's going on?" I said, "I'm looking for some radio frequency interference sort of thing." And he said, "Oh, yeah." I said, "Oh, look, it could be coming from this antenna up here that's related to the trams, but it's not on at the moment. It's never here when I'm here, and I've got to come back again, etc., etc." He goes, "There's a lot of surveillance done around here."
Oh,
and I'm thinking, that's not so good.
What type of surveillance did he say?
Yeah, there's police surveillance around there. And he didn't say what for, but he said there's police surveillance being done. Now, whether it is or isn't, we have had problems with the police and their surveillance equipment before, interfering with the mobile phone network. We've told them, you're naughty boys, you're meant to tell us when you set this up so we don't go and bust your sting and get...
So the police are interfering with the mobile network?
Yeah, they have one of their transmitters transmits accidentally on our frequency.
That'd be rather...
And then people cause... Yeah, we go investigate customer complaints and then we don't want to walk into something that could be giving away their...
That's a bit of a worry. You wouldn't want to walk into the middle of the wrong thing, would you?
Exactly. So we rely on them to tell us. But, you have to sort of go out and investigate to find out if it is actually them in the first place. Mm.
One other interesting bit, we're talking about mobile communications. I have a telephone, which I'm on a carrier, which is half owned by Telstra. Three. Let's name names here. they're unlocking phones for nothing at the moment. I don't know whether anyone knew that, but if you've got a phone on 3 and it's one of the ones that they can do over the phone, not everything can be done.
So what do you mean by locking?
Well, at the moment, you're locked into a network. That is, you cannot... Mark can't give me his SIM and I can be on the Telstra network on his system, and you can't give me your SIM.
So your phone can only be used on the 3, and they're taking that off the phone.
Yeah, which is very common practice in telephones where you buy prepaid things because they want you to lock you to the network. And
so usually you lock for the term of your contract, or if it's prepaid, it's permanently locked sort of thing. And then you can go and ask them to do it after your contract period's finished. So you're saying that they're unlocking them now anyway.
I just rang 3 the other day and said, listen, buddy, I was up the Central Coast in New South Wales and I couldn't use your service, but there was another company. And I'd like it unlocked, please. Oh, yes, certainly. And they gave me the numbers and keyed it in on the phone and it just unlocked.
No more internet and buying cables from the UK and special software to unlock it yourself anymore.
Well, there may be a bit of that if they're the phones. Like, there's different, and you probably know more about this than I do, but there's different operating systems in phones that some are, I'm not sure of the exact terminology.
Really. I've never unlocked a phone.
Haven't you?
Never need to. Well, I'm with the best carrier.
There's different flavours of unlocking, let me tell you. It's the French, the English version and all sorts of things. And if you've got the right version, you can key it in over the phone. And the operator gives you the appropriate key or PIN number for it. So I thought that was quite interesting. Another bit of interesting news as he grabs his car keys. I've got my new Commonwealth Bank little... What do you call these things? These are the security dongle-y things?
Yeah, we call ours Secure ID, but I think that's the brand name, not the actual... Like, it's a token, really.
Yeah, that's right. A token, that's the word I was looking for. Mm-hmm. The Commonwealth Bank are sending these things out to all their customers doing internet banking. And they've also offered everyone to register for SMS to get rid of this fraud problem that we've been speaking about regularly on the program. But you use one at work. Do you know how they work? Like, they dish up a 6-digit number, but do they lock to something? It's got me tossed.
No, I think it's got a clock in it that just basically changes every 30 seconds, and that code's valid for that 30 seconds. So it doesn't have to be too accurate with time, you know. It can probably...
And there's an algorithm in there or something that generates the number.
Work on the clock says this time and the algorithm says this and the code that initially started, the seed was different and all that sort of stuff. But both ends obviously know what it is and, you know, you'll never crack it in between.
I might try and look into that, see what makes them actually work. Because you just push the button and it prompts you for it and you log in. And it's just another level of protection on today's internet banking. And I did actually have a chat, I'll jump into a promo here. I spoke to Eugene Kaspersky last Wednesday night in Moscow.
The antivirus guru.
That's the man, the antivirus Eugene Kaspersky. And we had a really good chat. We're going to bring that to you all next week on the radio. We're going to do a bit of an antivirus, anti-Trojan sort of night and discuss what people are running on their systems and why and how and all that sort of stuff.
So that'll be one to look forward to.
Yeah, no, we stick with us, guys. We've got the big names. We've even got an hour of power in Google headquarters, in Google land. Googleplex in the United States very shortly too. So we're going to be talking to the search engine evangelist over there. And that's going to be something.
And that's his official title,
isn't it? That is his official title at Google, the search engine evangelist. Now, last week on the program, we've got you guys sitting apart this day. We have our guest, Anton, sitting in the middle because it gets a bit feisty in the studio at times. There was a very interesting debate about ADSL and broadband in general in this country between Mark and Graham over here. Let's just have a little bit of a recap and I'll just highlight. Sit back, relax, and put the arms down, right, boys?
I think we really need to deal with the facts and not Telstra's rhetoric. There is no doubt that we need to do better here with broadband, and we have a plan to achieve that, but it won't be at the expense of killing off all the competitors and hurting consumers, which is what Telstra will propose with rolling back competition.
Them's fighting words, if I'm not mistaken, between the federal government and the number one incumbent telco in this country.
She's right, though.
Could I hear, though, from those three people, they're all saying the same thing. We've all got a problem. They're all saying that. It's just about which way we go about fixing that problem.
Mm-hmm.
And Telstra's saying, we want to roll it out, but we don't want to have to sell it to everyone else.
But Telstra also saying, we don't want any rules. We don't care about people we're not going to make money off.
Well, they didn't quite say it in those words.
But that's the end effect, isn't it?
I'll agree to disagree with you on that one. But let's just take it to the extreme. Let's have no regulation for a minute, all right? Why couldn't you have no regular rules and regulations and Telstra then go and roll out wherever they want to and they charge whatever they want to because there's no rules and regulations on this? And the consumers would then, as Helen Coonan said, be complaining, but at least they'd have access to it. Then G9 come along and say, gee, Telstra's making a fair bit of money out of this. We're going to roll out our own network and we're going to undercut them. And then there'll be a competing network and the competition keeps the prices low.
I'll tell you where the flaw is in that.
Okay.
What are Telstra doing at the moment with ADSL2? Telstra have got ADSL2 in almost every telephone exchange in the country.
Can I also add that ADSL2 is unregulated, according to Graeme Samuel from the ACCC?
Correct. And this is why. They're not turning on ADSL2, even in exchanges where they've got the equipment, unless another competitor goes into that same exchange, spends the money, puts their own infrastructure in, and as soon as someone else has spent the money, Telstra start competing with them.
That's competition. That's what it's about. No but regulation why not and competition
to,
comes
why
in.
Why not turn it on to the consumers to
because
which they can
Telstra
supply it?
Supposedly is forced to then resell their
hardware.
But
they're not forced to. ADSL2 is unregulated.
Well, I think that's wrong. I don't think that is the case, because someone will come and resell that service, that ADSL2 Plus service, using Telstra's wires and Telstra's equipment. So
Telstra
they come and run
sell
their
it.
Own set of wires, their own everything, do they?
They come it and install matter. Their own equipment in the exchange. The only shared infrastructure is the copper lines from the exchange to the households.
Now, very interesting dialogue there between you two boys in relation to Senator Coonan's announcement. Everyone else, as Mark said, there were three. I just played back the Senator Coonan grab there, but there were three opinions on the show last week about the state of broadband in this country. Anyone got anything further to add down that line, or no?
No. I think that was pretty fair and balanced. And
we stated our points of view.
Well, yeah. Sorry, Graham, I'll push that fader up. Sorry,
we stated our points of view.
No, it was. It was a very interesting radio by all shapes and accounts. Graham Samuel recently had a discussion on this very topic about the ACCC's version of affairs in their negotiations with Telstra. This is what he had to say.
A number of competitors of Telstra have, throughout Australia, been upgrading the speed of broadband over the telephone line to something like 40 or 50 times the speed that many of us have been used to getting broadband in our homes. Just to put it in figure terms, many of us sort of have been used to taking broadband at a speed of about a quarter of a megabit a second, and they're offering these competitors of Telstra up to 10, in some cases even 20 megabits a second. Now that's 40 to 80 times the speed that, you know, we're used to getting it. Telstra said, well, look, we're going to artificially cap our speeds at 1.5 megabits. 1.5 megabits a second, and they've done so for some time. No one knows why they artificially capped it off. But just recently they said, well, we're going to upgrade our speeds, and those artificial cappings they lifted and said we're going to upgrade that to up to 8 megabits a second. And then they said, and in 364 exchanges around Australia, we're actually going to upgrade the exchanges even further to offer speeds of up to 20 megabits a second. Now, that's those high speeds the competitors are offering. But this is the interesting thing. They said, we're only going to do it in those exchanges where our competitors have beaten us to the punch already, where our competitors have already done it. So the questions I've asked of Telstra are these. One, why didn't you upgrade the speeds before now? Why did you wait? Your competitors have been doing this for up to 18 months, in some cases 2 years, right throughout Australia. Secondly, why are you limiting your real high-speed upgrades? That's that 20 megabits a second. It's called ADSL 2+. Why have you limited that to just the 364 exchanges in which your competitors have beaten you to the punch some months or years ago? Why won't you do it throughout your 2,700 exchanges throughout Australia, covering, you know, upwards of around 91% of the Australian population? What they're saying is, and this is the excuse they've been using, they use a convenient catchphrase. They say it's regulatory constraints. Now, what they mean by that is they say, well, the ACCC will force us to allow our competitors to piggyback on our back if we upgrade these other exchanges, and force us to sell access to those exchanges to the copper wire to our competitors at below cost. Now, as I said yesterday, Telstra knows that is nonsense. The first thing is that the area that they're talking about, the part of the infrastructure they're talking about, is not even regulated. It's not regulated by the ACCC. And we have said publicly that we don't see there being a compelling case for regulating it, because we want to encourage competitors to get out there and put their own alternative infrastructure in, their own alternative switching devices, and offer the sort of competition that has forced Telstra now to upgrade its switching devices in 364 exchanges.
That was Graeme Samuel there from the Australian Consumer Commission, the ACCC, talking about his sort of point of view about where regulation stops and starts in the current broadband dilemma.
And confirming that ADSL 2 Plus is not regulated.
That's right, very much unregulated. And as he said in that remark there, they are out to encourage suppliers to go and put their own equipment in the exchange.
Yep.
And hook into the unbundled local loop, which the ACCC do regulate. That's the copper that goes between the house and the consumer.
That's right, yeah.
But other than that, it's all fair in love and war, from my understanding of it.
So Telstra would be free to turn it on in all those exchanges if they wanted to.
Pretty much. Pretty much is the way I read it. They must
But they don't unless they've got a competitor already in there.
And that's commercial decision based from
Telstra. That's a commercial decision from Telstra.
Yeah. It's the to do with the regulatory.
And it's the sort of behaviour you can expect from Telstra when they're not constrained by regulation.
Okay, good. Glad we've sorted that out.
Mark's very silent.
No, I am silent because I don't know why they're doing it as well.
No.
But I also, I'm concerned from, and that we talk about no regulation, but I am concerned about the fact that Telstra go and upgrade their exchanges to do it, whether that's just with software or hardware, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But then someone comes in and says, I just want to resell your service. I don't want to put my own hardware in. I don't want to spend my own money. I just want to take the cream off the top. And I think that's what Telstra is
stopping. And I understand that concern from Telstra. There's two things that go that way, go against that. One is that Telstra do not resell ADSL 2 Plus services. Telstra only resell the ADSL 1 service. That's the service that goes up to 8 megabits per second.
Mm-hmm.
And that is regulated. That's right. And that's the one they resell.
But ADSL 2?
They don't resell
open slather.
It. No. They either sell it themselves or other people put the infrastructure in to do it. Other people put in what's called the DSLAMs, the units that sit in the exchange. Now, the other thing is that my mind always goes back to the dark days when we were rolling out pay TV in this country and there were two vans following each other down the street, basically rolling out the same cables.
Are we going to talk about that with Blu-ray and HD DVD shortly
and
too?
Well, in that it's not so bad because it's not infrastructure. But what's the point in duplicating so much infrastructure?
Well,
it costs twice as much for a service that is already too expensive.
That quality decision would have to be laid at the fairly and squarely at the feet of the current government
and
at the time.
And that's right. Only the government and the regulators can control that. It's not a decision that can be left to a private player.
Wouldn't you think that this sort of technology being rolled out is very important to the development of the country?
Absolutely.
And not to be sort of trusted to a commercial organisation, whether it be any of the incumbent type sort of telcos that are around now or even a new telco, wouldn't you think that the government would take it on board as a service that they would do
well,
and they would look after?
What I would expect that
and then the
government would...
The profits from that could be put back into redeveloping it because the government's non-profit, I would have thought.
Yep, you could use a private company like Telstra. You could pay Telstra to set it up and install it and have the actual end result, the cables or the fiber or whatever it is network owned by the government.
Wasn't that a company called Telecom?
It was, yeah.
Exactly.
And the services that are sold over that can be
PMG.
Open to competition. But where you've got infrastructure, where you've got actual physical cables, it's absolutely pointless having every single customer rolling out their own network.
I hear exactly what you're saying, Graham. Totally agreed. Now, we had a couple of callers in from last week's show, and some of them I couldn't put to air, but some of them I can. These guys are going to get a Tech Talk Radio coffee cup, and we know who you are because you left your details.
And also stay tuned at the end of this and get your pen and paper ready because we'll give out the number.
Nice and slow, too. We've had a request for a slow version of the number. This is Craig's call.
Hi, guys. Just in relation to the Telstra broadband issue. The only reason we have a drought in Australia for broadband is because Telstra is controlling all the broadband flows and its bottlenecks are the dams, i.e. it controls, it owns, and it restricts access to the national copper local loop, and it also restricts the competitive development of the alternative cable network. Wireless, as we know, is not a substitute for fixed line copper / broadband telecommunications. Telstra also restricts the development of ADSL2. You need unbundled local loop and you need access to Telstra exchanges to deploy, which are both controlled by Telstra. The only solution is for Telstra to commercially separate its monopoly elements, or those elements are regulated. If Telstra doesn't want to do the commercial bit, regulation is the only choice. The ball's in Telstra's court. Just a number of other comments. Canada is way up on the OECD list for broadband penetration, and it has a similar geography to Australia.
That's a valid point, don't you think? Canada, the Canadians?
I think it is a valid point. Wide open spaces are a very widely spread out population.
Oh, well, I have to disagree. Surprise, surprise. Now, why? There's another company. He was saying the only option is for Telstra to do this, Telstra to do that. It's not, the ball's not in Telstra's court. What about G9? No. Where's G9's cable? Where's G9's organisation that we've been talking about things for ages?
Where's the government behind all this? You know, you've got Senator Coonan up there banging her chest, saying, you know, everyone should do this.
Billions of dollars from the Telstra sale. Spend some of it on, even if it's not with Telstra, another company, and roll it out where you need it.
I did visit nowweareTalking.com.au before I came on the show, because it's always good to see what's being saying in the mainstream. AreweareTalking.com.au is Telstra's chat. It's a non-official site, but it's Telstra's site. And they had the 9 reasons up there why Senator Helen Coonan is wrong, and their point of view from, the Telstra side thing. Very interesting reading. They make some valid points, so it's probably worth a read. Another caller that we had was Randall up there in, as far as we go, up in Cairns in far north Queensland, talking about the state of telecommunications up there from his point of view.
We use an ADSL too here in Townsville. We pay about $20 a month for a connection. We get a free router, and I get about, I think I'm 10 gig. I'm just trying to find the detail. And I get a download speed of like 4,000 kilobits a second, I suppose, and an up of 700, and I'm a long way from the exchange. And I've had this since the 6th of the 6th in 2006. And the brand is NitrousNet. Just something that I think here in Townsville we might have jumped the gun a long time before others.
Did I say Cairns? I'm in Townsville. thanks, Randall. That was a very interesting point too. Yeah, Townsville, from recollection and all the media releases that I read, are very much in the forerunner of all this sort of technological rollout.
I think they were a pilot site for some of the ADSL2 technology, weren't they?
Of the very first companies to roll it out, I think, was up there in Townsville, Cairns, Townsville, that sort of genre.
That area, yeah. And I'm not sure whether it's Randall or whether it was someone else from the same area, but there's a post on the forum that talks about Nitrous ADSL2 connections that they're using.
Follow it up there and have a bit of a read. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. That was a little bit of a post-mortem from last week. Coming up on the show after the break that we're about to take, we're going to find out all the goings-on with Microsoft at the moment. There's some interesting stuff. We're also going to have a chat with Anton, who's in very shortly. He travels the world. He works for can I say who you work for? Yes? No? Yes? Yes? He works for Ericsson. They're the people that make mobile phones and networks and things like that. So we're going to get a bit of an interesting insight into that very shortly. And then down the track, we're going to talk a little bit about Google and the like. So you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Stay with us, and we'll be back with more in a moment.
Next week on Tech Talk Radio, we ask, what's keeping you safe online?
Let me think now. I've got to think about this.
For a laptop, I have AVG antivirus, and my other machine at home is a Linux box and doesn't have any virus scanners at all.
I figure if you're not connecting to the internet and other people's computers, you don't need virus software.
We run AVG on all three of those computers. It's nice and free.
Would it surprise you that things are probably going to get worse before they get better? We put a call into Moscow to speak to Eugene Kaspersky of Kaspersky Antivirus and asked Eugene where he thought the future would take us in the world of antivirus and anti-Trojan software, and what's the one thing that we all need to protect us into the future.
Well, actually, that depends on the police, I think. If police doesn't do necessary improvement into investigations, I think the situation will be very bad.
So that's next week on Tech Talk Radio, on the station you're listening to right now, so don't miss it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Digital rights management, we heard it there in the program. I'm going to talk a little bit about it now. Microsoft are up to their old tricks. Graeme, you have a very staunch opinion on digital rights management, don't you?
Yeah, I certainly do. I think that, as you heard in the promo just then, I've expressed it before, that it's starting to go far too far.
Well, so much to a point where I think, as Steve Jobs pointed out recently at the Macworld 2007 launch, I think it might have been just after that actually, that 90% of the world's music does not have digital rights management attached to it. No. That is, you go to the record library, go to the CD shop or wherever you buy your music from.
Normal CDs don't have any copy protection.
That's
or
right.
any DRM on them at all.
It's only when it hits this pod thing, this, you know, portable music player thing, that we actually start to whack this thing that called digital rights management, which means you can't
basically
move it or share
the
around.
Music studios are scared of the technology. Well, they don't understand the new technology.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think it's very much along those lines where they're the old dog in the new tricks domain type sort of thing. They're running business models back in the 80s where there was no such thing as peer-to-peer file sharing, and young kids that just, you know, zap a track from one device to another device in the schoolyard.
But when I was growing up, we all copied our LPs to cassettes and shared the cassettes around.
We certainly did, but I think the ulterior motive when I used to do that was really to not play the record and listen to a cassette so that you'd get a... Because, you know, the record's...
Well,
once you scratch and that was it, they're gone.
It went in the Walkman as well, so you could carry it around with you.
Oh, now, there was a concept, wasn't it? A big cassette player.
A portable cassette player.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when we started all these things, even audio cassettes had copy protection on them, didn't they?
Did they?
Yeah, you used to push out the tab, remember, when you made your own?
No, that was more on protection, wasn't it?
When you bought it from the shop.
It was write protection, not copy protection.
That's right, it was. You're right. And CDs used to go over their standard settings so that you couldn't copy them. Didn't they put some sort of... they went greater than their allowed.
There's been a couple of schemes
capacity.
For that, but none of them were very
serious.
But
they
do that in
but
DVDs
they do that
too.
Right at the start. They just did these little things to stop you copying them.
Yeah, but they do it on DVDs now. You know, you'll get your average single layer disc is greater than 4.7 gig, you know, so you have to sort of squash it if you're going to copy it and do that. So, you know, the tricks are still happening. But where we're heading now, Leo Laporte, who has a podcast in the United States, he made some very valid points about the new future of distributing video, because gone are the days of the video library. You know, at the moment, we all go down to the local red one or blue one, or sorry, it's orange one, isn't it? So on the corner there, or even the local one at the milk bar, I guess, or convenience shop. Sometimes they have little DVDs in their little racks and stuff like that, and you borrow it. But with the rollout, hopefully, of all the high-speed broadband, when it actually gets here, we'll be able to do it all online and in real time and faster.
We won't have to
go
down the shops at all.
Yeah, so the underlying reasoning is that Microsoft will be probably the company by default or by de facto that will distribute this, because everyone will have Vista on their desktop. Here's some very interesting thoughts on the potential that Microsoft has to upset companies around the world with this new form of copy protection.
So we were talking a little bit about Windows Vista last hour and about the copy protection that Microsoft has built into it. And I quoted a guy named Bruce Schneier, S-C-H-N-E-I-E-R. He's a great, I think one of the best security experts out there. But Bruce writes a great blog. He's a real expert on this stuff. And he's talking about the copy protection in Vista. He says, Windows Vista includes an array of, quote, features that you don't want. He says, and remember, this is one of the foremost security experts in the world, these new features will make your computer less reliable and less secure. They'll make your computer less stable and run slower. They'll cause technical support problems. They may even require you to upgrade some of your hardware and existing software. And they, and this is the important part, don't do anything useful. In fact, they're working against you. These features are built in so that Vista can play high-def DVDs, what they call it, premium content, content that's got some very serious copy protection in it, more than a regular DVD. Because, you know, we cracked the regular DVDs in about 3 seconds. So the movie industry said, we better do something a little better than that. So they've got this new AACS copy protection, which, I might add, has already been broken. Copy protection doesn't stop pirates. It never has. It never will. People who steal movies know how to get around it. They've known from day one. They know it's easy. That's not the issue. Copy protection only annoys honest users. Honest users are the people who are stopped by it, who are thwarted by it, who are inconvenienced by it, not pirates. And this is a perfect example. Now, here's the interesting angle on this from Bruce, and I have to say I had not thought of this. Microsoft says, hey, we had to do it. Hollywood's making us. If you wanted to watch an HD DVD on your computer, you have to have this in there. We don't have any choice. Bruce and many others have pointed out, wait a minute. Microsoft has 95% monopoly of the operating system market. Every computer has Windows on it, except for a small percentage that run Mac and Linux. And 95% is enough to say to Hollywood, nah, I don't think so. Hey, we're going to do it our way, and you're going to adapt to us, or you're not going to play on computers. Microsoft could have said this, probably should have said this. Bruce says, here's why Microsoft didn't say it, and I think this is very telling. He says, this isn't about stopping pirates, I'm quoting again, and the small percentage of people who download free movies from the internet. This isn't even about Microsoft satisfying its Hollywood customers at the expense of those of us paying for the privilege of using Vista. No, this is about the overwhelming majority of honest users and who owns, and this is the key, the distribution channels to them. He says, it might have started as a partnership. In the end, Microsoft is going to end up locking the movie companies into selling content in Microsoft's own formats. It's Microsoft's bid to control the distribution, electronic online distribution of music and movies. And frankly, that's the future. You may be a Netflix subscriber, you may go to the movie store and rent your movies, but in the long run, the future is online, downloading onto a computer-like device, running software probably made by Microsoft, and that's what Microsoft wants. He points out, you know, Microsoft is in the past, and nobody's doubted this, and even Microsoft admitted to it, used its monopoly, its control of the marketplace, to enter new markets, and he says this is a perfect example. So what do you do? Just say no to Vista? I think there's some very real, tangible benefits to Vista. In fact, I'm telling people, if you buy a new computer, you probably should get it with Vista. It will come with Vista. You shouldn't fight it. I'm using Vista on many of my machines. Ironically, not the machine that I use the most, because my software that I use, my editing software, doesn't run on it. What do we do?
Leo Laporte there from This Week in Tech, talking about a very valid issue, that is the new copyright protection and streaming systems built into the new Microsoft Vista operating system.
Yes, that's. I think he's spot on there with, Microsoft want everybody to be doing things their way with their formats.
But didn't they stuff Zune up?
Well, yes.
Leo Zune had a very good opinion on the Zune thing too.
We haven't heard much since, have we?
Have you seen a Zune? Have you heard of
one?
A Zune?
Haven't seen one advertised.
Nothing.
Haven't seen one reviewed. Nothing.
What does that tell you about the product?
It's got DRM.
Dear, but your thoughts, Graham? It's very valid, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, yes. If you're going to download a movie in the future, Microsoft want it to be in a WMV file. There's nothing surer. But, what can we do about it? I mean, there's even normal DVDs, the standard DVDs where the copy protection is so easy to crack, you can't get legitimate software to play those on operating systems like Linux.
Well, as Leo said there, you can actually get cracked DVDs now. It didn't take too long for people to do it. And the new stuff, the Blu-ray stuff, that's going to come out.
The fact is, it's got to play in every consumer's player, so that it's got to be crackable, otherwise you couldn't play it back. Mm. And if you can play it back, you can copy it.
Indeed.
How obvious is that?
Another interesting issue is the Vista upgrade. Have you come across this one in your travels, the Vista upgrade, where you can't
do a
clean...
I saw a headline about this. I haven't read the details of it. Yes. Have you got a...
A fresh install. Mark, you probably do that. You built a computer, I think, recently at home for the kids.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it had the same hard disk, so it's still running Windows XP. Very nice.
Normally, when you put Windows XP on, you just need something, you can put a fresh install on of a device... blow your hard drive away, format it, put the new system on, because that's safer, isn't it, guys? It works.
Yep. It generally works a lot better, makes your computer run faster and more reliable.
And anyone who's been using Windows has had to do that many a time over the years.
That's right.
For different reasons.
So, but yes, it's going to be very interesting times here, because now Vista is, or Microsoft have said that, no, Vista, you cannot do a fresh install on it. But there are workarounds and things like that.
No, I don't like that.
Don't you? Why not?
Oh, I feel, clean after you've done a fresh install.
Exactly
you don't do
right.
It that often,
exactly
it,
right.
Things run faster. Surprise, surprise.
And then you put your antivirus software on and everything grinds to a halt again.
But sometimes you put software on, then you take it off and never cleans up properly and things
That's
run
right.
slow.
You need to,
and
need to
just,
go back to a clean system again. Yeah.
When it gets that bad.
Our email address is feedback@techtalkradio.com.au if you want to put in your 2 cents worth on this. We'd like to hear from you. But once again, Leo Laporte made some very valid comments about this very topic.
Seems Microsoft changed the way Vista does its upgrades. In the past, when you bought an upgrade version of Windows XP or Windows 98 or ME, the way it worked is you could, of course, have an existing older version of Windows running. You'd put the installer in and run it and say, I see an older version, and would continue on. Or if you wanted to do what I recommend and many experts recommend, a clean install, that is, format the drive first, and then install Windows. You could also do that. It would just say, well, you know, it's an upgrade version, so let me see the old, show me the disk. And you'd insert the disk and it'd say, okay, fine, and it'd continue. Well, Microsoft really dropped a bombshell just before the Vista launch, saying it would no longer allow you to do a clean install. Microsoft Vista does not perform a clean install of Windows if you're using the upgrade version. In other words, you have to have XP on the drive or Windows 2000 on the drive, and Vista has to see it, and then it can install. Now, we don't recommend that because installing a new operating system on top of an old one is often a recipe for disaster. The best way to install Vista is to install it on a clean drive. Vista doesn't support that if you have the upgrade version, and most people aren't going to buy the full $400 version. They're going to buy the upgrade. Well, fortunately, there is a workaround. This has freaked a lot of people out. I mean, it is not the record. You know, if you have an existing XP machine and you're trying to install Vista, it is much better to format the drive, you know, back up your data, format the drive, and install Vista, than it is to install Vista on top of XP. It just is. It'll work, I guess, but you're going to have problems if you install it on top of XP. So here's what you do. You still format the drive. This will work with a Windows upgrade DVD. Boot your PC with a Windows Vista upgrade DVD. After the preliminary loading screen, click the Install Now button to start the setup. Here's the key. When it asks you for a product key, skip it. Do not. You can still install. This is so that you can try Vista. You get to try it for, I think, 30 days without a product key, without even buying it. So you can install it without the key. So don't enter the key and install a clean install. Erase the drive, blank drive, no key. And then you deselect the option, by the way, that says automatically activate Windows when I get online. So in effect, you're installing a trial version of Windows. Go ahead and install it. Install the version that you have an upgrade key for, by the way. Don't install, you know, don't, this workaround does not let you buy Home Premium and then install Ultimate. No, you have to install the version that you have a serial number for. Once you do the install, you can now activate it. But the way to do it is you install again on top of Vista. Now, the good news is it's not going to take a long time because Vista's smart enough to say, oh, you already have the files and skip all that. You'll install again, and this time you'll enter the product key, and it's fine. In other words, you're upgrading the trial version of Vista, and it's fine. Now, it's a little bit of a loophole. I don't think Microsoft intended this, but it solves this problem, and I think it's a big problem because every expert, and I include myself in this, says it's best to install clean, to install on a formatted drive. Now, it also means, I can't imagine Microsoft's unaware of this, but it also means that you can buy an upgrade edition of Vista even if you're not upgrading from an older version of Windows. So it'd be crazy to buy a full version of Vista ever. I don't think Microsoft's losing any money because how many people aren't actually upgrading from an existing version of Vista? I mean, that's pretty much the way it is. You probably, unless you've been using a Mac your whole life, you probably have a copy of Windows that you purchased at some point, maybe with a new machine, but that you have a legitimate copy. But in fact, there's no reason to buy the full version of Vista. You could just upgrade following this process. You install, don't activate, don't give it a serial number, and then upgrade that installation.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
So there you go. Upgrade the upgrade. What do you reckon, Gray?
That sounds perfect to me. That's a good workaround.
A very feasible option. Because as Leo was saying there, normally you just stick your old, you know, Windows 2000 or XP disk into your CD-ROM drive, and it'll go, yep, you're cool, off you go, and it'll put a new version on your new drive, and away you go. But not this time.
No, but I'm pleased to hear there's a way around it.
Another thing I'll do.
Definitely be using that.
Oh, yes,
is that a way around it or a Microsoft feature?
Well, if you document the bugs, they're features.
Yes, exactly right. Yes.
Another thing too, when I put a new drive into a machine, I'm doing an upgrade, normally you take the opportunity to go from the 20 gig hard drive to the 300 gig hard drive.
That's right, yes.
So you keep your old drive and put it as your D drive or your E drive or something like that. Yep. So you don't have to lose any data or risk anything.
Store your music on it or something, and you never know because it's not big enough anymore.
That's right. And then you just put a brand new drive in and you format that, and you boot your operating system, and then you then pull the files across from your old drive onto your new drive, and voila, brand new, fresh install, ultra-fast drive, ready to go.
Yes.
Now, isn't that a sensible way to go? But Microsoft say, no, you can't do that. You've got to go and... Yes, if you're running an old 2000 or an XP drive, you get the legacy files on it.
What do Microsoft, other than this workaround, what do Microsoft suggest if your hard disk fails and you have to buy a new one just for your computer?
You'd have to ask them, I reckon.
We don't know, do we?
No. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
If you've got anything to say on the DRM issue or on the Telstra issues we were talking about before, give us a call and leave us a message on 1-300-664-882.
Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy. It's child's play.
Podcasting's so easy, even my little brother can do it.
Step one, visit the iTunes Music Store and search for Tech Talk Radio in the podcast section. Step two, click subscribe and you're done. Now every week you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn, on a train, in a car, on a plane, at work,
visiting the relatives, washing the car. Crazy.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Our guest this evening here has been putting up with our banter for the last hour or so is Anton. And how do you say your surname, Anton?
Von der Merwe.
Yeah, good. I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, I say nothing like that when I say
that's
what
we call it. Expect it to repeat it.
He who is known as Anton is sitting across the other side of the bench there. Now, you are a bit of South African / English / Australian. Is that a fair enough thing to say?
Well, almost not quite yet. South African is pretty true and a bit of English in there, yes.
A bit of English?
Living in Australia.
Not much there. English, but a little bit of English. The accent is still very...
Hints off, yeah.
Yes. We're very multicultural here on Tech Talk Radio, if nothing else, don't you think? We've gone from Russia to California to... Lyd's not on the show tonight, by the way. She's on assignment in Google Land.
Googleplex, yes.
Googleplex, that's right.
Meeting the evangelist.
But, yes. But, yes, nothing if multicultural, as I say. So, Anton, you work for, or you work with, or side-by-side with Mark, you involved in the telephony business of some manner of speaking.
Yeah, that's right, in the mobile business, and Mark is actually my customer.
There you go.
Oh, you're a customer.
Yes, that's right. Oh, good. So I've had the pleasure of working with Anton for 6 months. He works for Ericsson, who are providing the rolling out the next-G network for Telstra as a sort of turnkey system.
Okay.
But as the network gets more and more rolled out and we start working on optimizing it, we work side by side working on similar issues to try and get the best performance out of the network.
So does Anton bring the box over and unpack it and then you pick it up and put it in the rack? Is that how it works?
Yeah.
Sort of?
Almost. In a engineering set on the desktop, work on your computer type sense.
Okay.
Not the physical
stuff.
Oh,
so the physical stuff, you leave that to somebody else to do, but you guys do all
exactly.
The keystrokes
to
turn it on.
We do a bit of physical, though. We get out the office and I drive.
Yeah. He drives his car and I work the computer behind it and trying to learn something and he's telling me which buttons to push and that sort of thing. So.
Does it all work pretty well out of the box or is there a lot of tweaking and fiddling and setting
up? The equipment works very well out of the box.
Okay.
Putting it all together to work with each other, a bit of equipment, that's a bit harder, and that's where we come in to make it all
okay.
Work to make it usable.
So. Yeah. Mm. Oh, very good. Now, you travel a bit, Anton, obviously, and the reason you're in having a chat to us tonight is about some of the gadgets and getting them to work from, you know, get off the plane in one part of the world, and does it all work? And is it really that seamless or not, do you think?
Well, it all depends. It's not that seamless. You need to make it work yourself, so you need to understand what you're doing. So there's a bit of challenges in there as well, so you need to understand the technology and the limitations to it as well. But in the end of the day, if you manage your way around, then yes, it works pretty well.
So Anton's a bit of a gypsy. He likes to roam the world doing contracts for different companies.
And he buys things and brings them back. And we saw your Belkin little Skype phone.
Yep. Yeah, that was a Wi-Fi Skype phone.
Can I say that my neighbour's locked his network down since we made those Skype calls?
That was only a test call too.
I know, but he's gone locked now. He must be listening to the show.
He is.
So you must see a lot of gadgets in your travel, Anton. Especially in the duty-free lounges at airports when you're travelling the place. You go, oh, look at that one. Resist.
You sit a couple of hours on the airport and there's nothing else to do. So what do you do?
Yeah, so he arrives at a new place. When you arrive in a new country... Basically, how do you give yourself a contact so that people can call you? Like, you're in a new country, so do you have a roaming phone from the UK, or do you get yourself set up first thing with an internet connection? What do you do?
Oh, well, that's normally the case, and as I'm based in the UK and traveling around, I normally keep my principal mobile number back in the UK and just keep it roaming. which works out pretty expensive when you get into a new country. But it's
glad you pay the bills, Mark. Or what's the point that the phone company pays the bills when you give Anton a call?
Unfortunately, that's for your own pocket to start off with. But pretty much within the first week or couple of weeks, you get to know the local area, see where you can hook up on a free wireless off the neighbours or something like that.
Yeah. There's plenty of them
around.
Go to
the library, the state library here in Victoria, and there's other spots.
Yeah, but there's also some fairly entrepreneurial councils which are now putting in wireless hotspots in certain parts. Like, I think even Canberra's going to be completely wireless.
The shopping centres have slow but free Wi-Fi as well.
Yeah, and so does Golden Arches, but you've got to pay for it.
Yeah, there's plenty all over, and you can just search around. What's always helpful as well is there's a company in the UK called Boingo. And you can
I've heard of these guys, yeah.
They're Boingo.com. And what's interesting about them is they own pretty much a lot of wireless hotspots across America where they've started, and then they started roaming agreements with loads of companies and countries around the world. Like, for instance, BT in the UK and a local company in Australia called Azure they can roam onto.
So BT being British Telecom?
British Telecom, that's correct, yeah. So you can set up an account with them online, pretty easy, straightforward. Pay your subscription monthly, which is not that expensive. Last time I've done it, I think it was something like $50, if I remember correctly, per month. And you can then roam over into BT, you can roam over into Azure in Australia. So that gives you your initial internet connection that you need for Skype and email and all the things to stay in touch.
So
and
basically you have like a Gmail account or one that you can, Yahoo account or something like that?
That's right, that you can access then through this internet. And not long thereafter, within a month or two, you will be set up with a local mobile phone account, which you can do like in a data package. Telstra, for instance, $99 a month, and it gives you 1 gig's worth of data. And that's more than sufficient.
Is that comparable with other parts of the world, or are we dear here?
That's on par. It's very comparable. Okay. And that's more than sufficient to do your Skype, contact the family, call them at home, download email, do the banking, what's needed, and so forth.
So what sort of a device do you carry with you to connect to that sort of a network, to connect to the wireless network and do the email and that sort of stuff?
Well, I've got a laptop with a Vodafone VMC data card. Uh-huh. And
what's VMC?
VMC is
for those who don't know.
Good question. I don't know.
What does it do?
We've got a Vodafone card in the laptop. Yep.
Yeah, it's just a PCMCIA data card that you stick into it, and surprisingly, you can put any SIM in there, and it works.
Oh, good.
So you just need to alter your APN, which is your access point node, and that's just something that you get off your local mobile operator. Uh-huh. Stick it in there, and it works. Apart from that, I've got a Jazz Jam, one of these latest and greatest HTC phones.
Dr. Ron's got one of those, remember him?
These are the iMate PDA phone things.
That's correct, yes. That's correct. And the 3G version, which is available lately, is very powerful in actually running a decent Skype session on that as well.
Okay.
Downloading emails, sending emails, and pretty much lock, stock, and barrel you can do in it.
Your PDA, your Jazz Jam, is like a portable computer to you, but one you can carry on you. So do your Skype on it. You can do your email on it.
Yeah.
What else can you do?
Well, on your email, you can open your attachments like Word documents, Excel documents, PDF documents.
Okay.
And
so it's got viewers for PDF. It's got a QWERTY keyboard.
Skype it does very well. And what I've got as well is a very interesting software version or Windows mobile software version of TomTom.
The GPS navigation.
That's correct, system. Yes. The TomTom Go, as you know it. Okay. And I think
there's a few different names, but TomTom
has a very good reputation.
Yeah, it's getting a quality name in Australia now.
Especially in Europe where they started off. And they worldwide now, almost. You get maps for all over the USA, for Australia. And you can actually buy the individual maps on a CD off them. You can order that off their website, or if you're in the UK itself, you can just buy it in the local PC retailer shop. I haven't spotted any of them local in Australia, though. But I managed to get hold of a set of maps for Australia, and I've loaded it on my memory card in my Jazz Jam, and I can navigate anywhere in Australia. And I've got voice prompts that is pretty accurate.
Okay, so to do this, though, you'd need a GPS. Is there a GPS in your Jazz Jam?
Not inside the Jazz Jam itself. What I use is a Bluetooth GPS.
Bluetooth
GPS.
How does that work?
Now, that must be very small, I'm thinking here. It's remotely disconnected from your device.
It's pretty much a matchbox size.
Yep.
And it runs on its own battery, and it's just something that you switch on. It's a dumb thing with three LEDs on there. You pair it up with your Jazz Jam, and configure TomTom to use that specific serial port that it's been paired onto. And the moment you start TomTom, it will access your Bluetooth GPS and then give you spot-on navigation.
So where do you put your GPS? Your Bluetooth GPS, like you put on your cap?
The Bluetooth GPS, well, you could do anyway. I've even been clipping it on my backpack when I was cycling.
Okay.
Or just in the window in the...
Sorry, on the dashboard of the car.
Dashboard and the back, anywhere you'd like.
Now I've seen this one. It is literally just slightly bigger than a matchbox, and it uses a Nokia mobile phone battery and comes with a Nokia charger, and it's only got like two or three LEDs, and you basically just push one button on it, which pairs it with your Jazz Jam or any other device for that matter, and then you've got a GPS.
It's going to be fantastic for tourists in any city in the world, providing you've got the maps, I guess, really, isn't it?
Providing you've got the maps, yeah.
Yeah, don't trust Google. Remember what happened last week? They Google, I don't know whether you heard this one, Anton, or not, but Google released part of their new Australian campaign, how to get from 202... I can't remember the name of the street, but anyway, Google headquarters opposite a hotel from where a journalist was staying, and he said, "Oh, give this a go." Anyway, it took him 18 kilometres across the bridge and back a bridge just to go across the road in Sydney, which I thought was very funny.
Yeah, but I think the Google's version is more intended for live streaming, and you need to be connected to the internet at that point in time, where this is a standalone thing that you don't have to have any connection. And TomTom does make a version of the software that runs pretty well on the Symbian 60 platform as well.
Okay. Explain to the Symbian 60. That's one of the more modern operating systems, isn't it?
That's the phones and things? Nokia smartphones, your Nokia intelligent phones. They started off in the 6600 series Nokia phone, and then the 6630, the 6680, and I think the N71, N72, those series runs the
More modern
Symbian 60 as well. But it works very, very well.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. So with your Bluetooth GPS, is that what you used to get here tonight? Because I remember trying to give you the address, and he said, "Don't give me the street directory Melway's reference." He didn't want that long. He didn't want the street directory's map reference. You know, he didn't want page this, you know, H4 and that sort of thing.
Well, he got
he
it.
He just
so
wanted the street names. And I said, "Oh, well, you know, it's the neighbourhood centre or it's the, you know, studios are at this location," sort of thing.
Yeah, all I asked Mark is just to give me the exact address, give me a street name, and give me a number. And
that's how people normally navigate, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I would have done the extra bit and pointed it out to him and showed him the map reference, and that would have been done. But no, just types it all into his Jazz Jam and TomTom.
There you go.
And the woman's voice on his TomTom, he calls Veronica.
That's a Nick's name.
Does she tell you where to go?
She tells me where to go.
That's brilliant.
Not the only one, though. She's not the only one telling me where to go.
All right, well, we'll discuss that in the break. We'll be back with Anton. We'll talk a little bit more about this just after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
If you want the latest Tech Talk Radio on your smartphone or PDA, visit the new Tech Talk Radio website, ttr.mobi. This is a lightweight website designed especially for small screen devices, so it loads quickly and provides easy navigation around our most popular links. You can find out what's on the current program, check show archives, and access links to the regular website. Remember, for the latest Tech Talk updates when you're on the move, go to ttr.mobi.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're talking to he who is known as Anton, with the pronounceables. what are we going to talk about now, though? The weather. How do you find out about the weather when you rock up in
New
Towns?
You're arriving in a new country. You're not used to watching the news. You don't know when it's on. And you've got time zone differences to people in other countries that you're familiar with and your family. So what do you do about that sort of thing?
Yeah, Mark, I happened to stumble across a very interesting program some years ago. And at the time, they were called Confabulator.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's like widgets for your Mac, wasn't it?
Widgets, yeah, that's the one. For Mac, and eventually PC adopted them as well, or there was a PC version of it.
There was.
And Yahoo had seen that, and they possibly thought it was so great they bought it. So all of a sudden, it was rebranded Yahoo again.
Okay, so that's why we're not familiar with them. But I remember Confabulator.
Yeah, it's called Yahoo Widgets now, and Google does something similar as well. Google Widgets, I suppose, although I'm using the Yahoo version of it.
Mm-hmm.
And by using that, you can download widgets, which is just an application running on your desktop, really, uses memory on standby all the time. And when you press F8 on your keyboard, this pops up, and it shows you a clock and basically a weather prediction that it fetches off weather.com. But it's very helpful and very handy to have it always at hand. And what I've found is this individual widgets are individual files that's copied onto your hard drive underneath your My Documents in a special folder. And you can actually make multiple copies of that. So what I've done is I copied my weather widget and called it weather 1, weather 2, weather 3, and weather 4. And executed all of them. And it's given me four different weather prediction icons, or what you can call them, on the desktop. And you can configure them one by one then to show
you. You must get around if you need that. One day in Moscow, one day in
you
wherever.
You can see for time zones where it'd be good because you'd have four copied of the time, but and then you set those clocks.
It's like world clocks that you put up as well then. That's a combination of clocks and weather predictions and so forth. So you can always see what's the weather back home, what's the weather where the family is, and what's the weather where we're going to go next.
Mm-hmm. But it's better than that because the ones I've seen, you can do the radar image for Melbourne and Sydney and all the spots where they've got the Australian radar image. You've got a widget for that.
You mean the weather radar?
The weather radar, yeah.
And so also you can see if it's about to rain.
Yeah, so you can leave that as a widget on your PC. And
that'd be great if you're out working on radio antennas.
Yeah, there's thousands and thousands of different of these widgets. And if you go into the main widgets.yahoo.com website, it actually takes you to a developer section as well. I haven't fiddled around there myself, but obviously there's local people in Melbourne and so forth that's been fiddling around with it because they managed to get our local weather radar on
there.
That's
fantastic, isn't it?
That's brilliant. So,
and I think there's one for trains if they're running late in that as well.
Trains and trams and everything, yeah. That's
the thing. What will I think of next? I must admit, I'm not a big widget user. I do have a little app that I use for the weather, which I keeps in my taskbar on my PC, which I find invaluable.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't need to travel as much, obviously, but it's all good, the technology. Now, is there things that don't work? Have you got to a place and you've had your favorite gadget and you turn it on and nothing?
Yes, that did happen a couple of times on my previous laptop.
Oh, so it's a laptop thing, is it?
Well, it works on a desktop or a laptop or any type of computer, but it's resource hungry. So if you've got a laptop or a desktop 3-4 years of age, and you're going to run more than 8 or 7 instances of this widgets, then it's going to eat up your resources.
Mm-hmm. Now, coming from another country, you have certain programs that you like to watch and download off the internet and things like that. So what do you do for entertainment, for your TV viewing and your music and that sort of thing, podcasts and the like?
Yeah, what we managed to travel with us all over the world is a small little, what they call a mini PC. And I've set that up as a Windows MCE or Media Center Edition, which is all incorporated in the new Vista Home Premium, I believe, yeah?
Yeah, I believe so. And Dr. Ron's running a version of the Media Center at his place too, which
has
been interesting.
Yeah. Well, actually, that incorporated with the Windows Media Infrared Remote Control and the Infrared Receiver makes it very, very useful and very user-friendly and interactive to use as a replacement for your set-top boxes, DVD players, tuners, and so forth.
Okay. So, and if you want, does that connect to the internet via Wi-Fi, or do you then copy CDs or DVDs across?
Or? Either or. You can use it as a DVD player. Just stick a DVD into the DVD drive of the PC itself, or you can use the existing internet connection to download your favorite series that you missed off back home. Or just get any disc from anybody with movies on there, or even your podcasts you can watch on this Media Center device of yours.
Okay.
So that's great entertainment, and it's a small little PC, and we just carry it all over in the world when we move every 6 months or every year or whenever.
Now, you're talking about telling me about this service called Fax to Email and Email to Fax. Explain that to us.
Well, that is a service that I've also happened to stumble across, that changed name in the interim, but today they're called eFax, and they're available on the internet on eFax.com. Now, what they do is you subscribe to them. They've got a free version as well, which has got some limited availability or some limited use. But I use this subscribed version, and what it provides me is a local telephone number or fax number back in the UK, which you can actually, on a per county basis, select your area dialing code, for instance. Where I'm come from back in the UK is Birmingham, and the area code there is 0121. So they allowed me to select a local telephone number, 0121 coded, and use that as a fax number. So I can provide everybody back at home or wherever in the world with my fax number, which is 0121, and the local number. And what they'll do, they'll receive the fax on my behalf, put it over onto a PDF document and email that to me real time.
Okay, so that's when you want to receive faxes. What if you want to send them? Is it the reverse?
If you want to send them, it's pretty much just the reverse. You compile the fax in a PDF document, either or in your Word document or even in the email itself as the body of the email, and then you can send it to any fax number recipient at efaxsend.com, and they'll deliver that for you and even come back with a received letter.
Okay, so your confirmation of it. Yeah.
That's a brilliant service. I like the sound of that.
Okay.
Especially if you're on the road a bit. I guess if absolutely. You haven't got someone needs to get your hard copy, that's always the hardest thing when you've only got a laptop. Like, what do you do? So get someone to scan it and email it to you. But no, the service like this would work really well, I would have thought.
Under correction, I think you can even get an Australian number.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it works off my Jazz Jam.
Oh, fantastic. But how do you read the fax on your Jazz Jam? Like, surely the screen size is a little bit...
There are limitations in there.
You zoom in and scroll around.
If it's a really urgent fax, you're just too happy to have received it.
Yes, exactly. Like, where's the on-off switch again? Yeah, exactly. All right, Anton, just bear with us. We're going to have a little bit of a break. Dr. Ron, as listeners may recall, and as even as colleagues in here sitting on the panel may recall, he comes in from time to time. He didn't want to... Last year,
he hasn't come in for a while.
No, I don't know where he is. He's on assignment, I think. Mm. He's doing a job for his mum or something. I'm not sure what's going on. But yes, he left us a lovely little selection here about the new HD, DVD, and Blu-ray fiasco, which is unfolding. Okay. So have a little bit of a listen to this when we come back. We'll probably get into some Google stuff. So here's Dr. Ron's report all about Blu-ray and HD, DVD.
So what's it going to be, HD, DVD or Blu-ray? That's the big technology question of 2007. And already the major players are forming alliances with manufacturers and retailers in what's been touted as the biggest format war since Sony's Betamax took on JVC's VHS in the mid-70s. So what is Blu-ray and what is HD, DVD? Well, they're both video formats for the next generation of high-density optical disc, and they're both intent on replacing the DVD player and VHS tape machine in your living room. Like the VHS versus Betamax saga of the 70s and 80s, Blu-ray and HD-DVD are competing formats, and both want that valuable lounge room real estate beneath your television. HD-DVD is capable of storing 50 or 30 gigabytes of storage for single and dual layer versions, while Blu-ray can hold 25 or 50 gigabytes for its single or dual layer versions. In other words, between 3 and 10 times the capacity of current DVD technology. Both formats use a blue laser to read from and write to the disc, and both are designed for data storage, in particular, high definition video. Now, HD-DVD is backed by some well-known and respected brand names. In fact, the HD-DVD standard was jointly developed by a group of consumer electronics companies a few years back, led by Toshiba. Microsoft also hopped on the bandwagon in November last year, releasing an external add-on HD-DVD drive for its popular Xbox 360 games console. Other companies backing the HD-DVD technology include NEC, Sanyo, RCA and Intel. For movie titles, HD-DVD is exclusively backed by Universal Studios and is non-exclusively backed by Paramount Pictures, DreamWorks, Warner Brothers and the Warner Music Group. Well, this all sounds like a fairly tough act to follow, wouldn't you agree? Well, let's look at Blu-ray and see what this format has to offer. Blu-ray has been championed by industry heavyweight Sony. Other brands like JVC, Philips, Samsung and Panasonic have also backed the Blu-ray format, releasing domestic players and recorders in Germany, Japan, the United States and also Australia. Large corporates like Hewlett-Packard, Apple and Dell have also backed the format. In response to Microsoft's adoption of the HD-DVD standard for its Xbox 360, Sony decided to include a read-only Blu-ray drive in its PlayStation 3 games console. Let's talk about the technical differences. Which format is better technically? In terms of audio and video compression, Blu-ray and HD-DVD are similar on the surface. Both support MPEG-2, VC1 and a video compression codec called H.264. They also support Dolby Digital AC3, PCM and DTS for audio compression. The first generation of Blu-ray disc movies was released using MPEG-2, which is the standard currently used on DVDs, although it's encoded at a much higher video resolution and a much higher bitrate. Initial HD DVDs used the VC1 codec. Due to greater disc capacity, the Blu-ray disc could use higher video bitrates in the future. In terms of audio, there are some differences. The Blu-ray format allows conventional AC3 audio tracks at 640 kilobits per second, which is higher than HD DVD's maximum of 448. But Dolby Digital Plus is mandatory for standalone HD DVD players, while this is optional for Blu-ray. Both HD DVD and Blu-ray machines do or should support HDMI into your television. HDMI stands for High Definition Multimedia Interface and replaces the older component and S-video connections between your television and DVD or tape machines. HDMI carries digital video and audio all in one cable and is designed for that 1080p high definition video and high quality lossless audio formats. So where are we with domestic equipment? What's on the shelf and what's it worth? The first HD DVD player and recorder is available from Toshiba. The RD-A1 retails for a cool $4,500 Australian dollars and includes a massive 1TB hard disk. The budget DVD producer Liteon is also manufacturing a no-frills HD DVD machine, which should be available to Australian consumers soon. Over in the Blu-ray camp, big names like Samsung have started churning out domestic products. The BDP-1000 is now available in Australia for around $1,700, but early performance reviews have been disappointing. The world's so-called number one gadget magazine, T3, recently reported that Samsung's domestic offering has a slow start-up time compared with a DVD player, also sluggish menus and not worth the price tag. If you don't have a spare $1,700 to spend on a menu-sluggish, slow-startup Blu-ray machine, then you're not alone. Many are waiting for the March release of Sony's PS3. Even though it's being marketed as the ultimate games console, the integrated Blu-ray drive is expected to have a big impact on the home entertainment business. T3 also reported that the new Maestro Pro V Media Center, containing a Blu-ray drive and twin HD tuner, was anything but flawless. Microsoft's support of the HD DVD format is evident with Windows Media Center not supporting Blu-ray in this machine. Additionally, the HDMI output on the Maestro was an optional extra. For around $3,500, T3 recommends waiting for a version running Vista Media Center if you're after Blu-ray compatibility. So what movie titles can we expect on these competing formats? HD DVD titles headed this way include Land of the Dead, Mission Impossible 3, Serenity and Apollo 13. Other HD DVD titles include The Last Samurai, Million Dollar Baby, The Phantom of the Opera by Warner Home Video and Serenity by Universal Studios. So far, 163 titles have been released in America and 61 in Japan. Blu-ray titles now being produced include Tears of the Sun, The Exorcism of Emily Rose, Into the Blue and SWAT. All in all, more than 157 titles have been released on Blu-ray disc. The first movies using Blu-ray dual-layer discs or 50GB discs were introduced in November 2006, but single-layer discs are currently far more popular with developers. So, what's the verdict? While we're still in the early stages of these technologies, HD DVD appears to be cheaper and easier to produce. Certainly the hardware is more affordable and the picture quality on early discs has been excellent. Unfortunately for HD DVD, there's less storage space than Blu-ray and the format isn't supported by as many Hollywood studios. HD DVD simply hasn't managed to secure the support of as many companies as Blu-ray. In Australia, the prices of domestic machines are still comparable and still hideously expensive by our DVD player standards. Blu-ray has more capacity, supports a higher video bitrate and has better industry support, but until those prices come tumbling down, the battle is far from over. This is Dr. Ron, reporting for Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ron, for the very informative insight into HD-DVD. Hopefully it's all a little bit clearer than it has been. Anton has joined us. Anton, what sort of countries don't talk to technology? For, if you grab all your bits and pieces, and just quickly, because we're running out of time, what's the most inhostile or unhostile country, or hostile country is probably the word, that you would visit technologically wise?
Well, I wouldn't say they don't talk technology, but the technology is just of a different language. And I would say that's the Americas. They're all out on their own.
It's funny, I made a phone call to Russia during the week, just the other day, and it was clear as a bell, whereas you ring the United States and it's echoey and the line drops out and all sorts of things. I just thought I'd add that, by the way.
Is that because the rest of the world learned from their mistakes? So they come up with a television system, everyone goes, yeah, that's great, that television. And then they go, but we'll invent a better one. We don't want to run the old one.
Well, that's why we've got high-definition television, because the Americans invented NTSC.
I thought the British invented television.
Well, they probably did, and then someone got to it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yes, anyway. Yes.
And claimed to be there first.
One of the things we've been talking about on the show tonight is Google. And there is a website which tells you all about the big things that have been searched on Google. Now, would you believe in 2006, I'll just give you the 3-2-1 version, the third most or the third top search was World Cup.
Oh,
for the football fanatics.
2006. Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, I can believe you mean that. Soccer. I wouldn't have thought of that.
Yeah, but, yep. World Cup is the world. I don't mean anything. I mean World Cup, because that's what it says on my list here.
All right.
Okay. And then the second one was MySpace, because everyone wanted to go to MySpace, one of the social networking sites.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And MySpace.com was just too complex for people to work
out. Yeah, they couldn't work that one. Well, this is Google for you. Now, the top one, which I'd never heard of.
Well, we can't talk about this. It's a family program.
It is another social networking site. It's called Bebo.
I'm sorry?
Bebo. B-E-B-O.
Never heard of him.
No, neither had I until I read this. But apparently that was the top. In 2006, on Google search, that was the top site.
That's search not
for.
What I would have expected.
No, exactly. You were talking about all sorts of other things.
Yeah. Is that a site we shouldn't be talking about or something, is it?
No. It's a social networking site. They're all fashionable and trendy these days, so you just go to the one which best suits your requirements, really. I think that's the way that
now,
they work.
Now, that's one we haven't heard of. That's why you had to do a Google search.
That's right. Now, also, can you believe this? They give you the list of what's currently hot to trot for Google searches.
Oh, yes.
Can I say that last week it was Britney Spears?
Oh, what?
Oh, no.
Because she cut her hair. She shaved her head.
She did. She did, followed by, I'll go backwards here, the number one was Britney Spears, the second top was Lunar New Year, the third top was Antella Barbara, whoever she might happen to be, the fourth one was Bridget Moyen, something or other? Not ringing a bell with anyone here,
no.
Do we need an Australian version so we understand?
And the fifth, well this is .com I guess, so yeah, the fifth one was American Idol. Now that speaks volume, doesn't it? Because they couldn't put it into that Google thing.
Shows the people have got too much time on their hands.
Ah, oh, dear. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We'll be back with our favourites after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Next week on Tech Talk Radio, we ask what's keeping you safe online.
Let me think now. I've got to think about this.
Well, for my laptop, I have AVG antivirus, and my other machine at home is a Linux box and doesn't have any virus scanners at all.
I figure if you're not connecting to the internet and other people's computers, you don't need virus software.
We run AVG on all three of those computers. It's nice and free.
Would it surprise you that things are probably going to get worse before they get better? We put a call into Moscow to speak to Eugene Kaspersky of Kaspersky Antivirus and asked Eugene where he thought the future would take us in the world of antivirus and anti-Trojan software, and what's the one thing that we all need to protect us into the future.
Well, actually, that depends on the police, I think. If police doesn't do necessary improvement into investigations, I think the situation will be very bad.
So that's next week on Tech Talk Radio, on the station you're listening to right now, so don't miss it.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Son of my own!
Don't you love these days? Whenever you go to your car, you don't have to fumble, get the key in the lock. You just push a button and the car doors open. Even the boot will spring open for you on modern cars.
Right.
And
great technology, really.
This week's gadget is the same technology, remote keys, for your house.
Oh, hallelujah. Someone's finally come up with a front door one. Oh, fantastic.
So this is keyless remote entry for your house. You press a button and your front door springs open.
Now, you can just imagine this. People will be sitting out hijacking the beeps from your device so that when you go out,
not.
They can record your beeps on the 413 meg band or whatever it is and play back at your front door.
Let's hope they've got a rolling code.
Yeah. carrying the groceries in from the car and the shopping and all that, wouldn't it be great?
Oh, fantastic. How much?
The device is called, it's called a lock of your door, and the price I've got here is £149, so that'll be...
So by about three, isn't it?
Yeah.
We've got someone from that part of the world. What's that about?
Two and a half.
There you go.
So about $500.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. Good. Okay, the Tech Talk Radio gadget of the week is the what? Locker
your door.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
This week's website of the week is www.edisposals.com. One word, edisposals. It's from a listener. No, we must apologise to that listener because we don't have the email of who sent it in, but it came from
Dr. Ron.
And thank you to that listener who sent it in. On this website, you can look at all the disposals from the Ministry of Defence in the UK.
Oh, good.
So you can buy, if you like, a heavily spared, recovered, possible museum piece, non-effective Jaguar aircraft, if you like. Or, if you like, you can have the RMAS Fiona for £70,000.
Gee, that's a bargain. Where would you put it? We haven't got any water to put it in.
I don't know. Amongst other ships.
You're not allowed
and
to fill up your swimming pool.
That sort of thing. I was looking at some of the audio-visual IT stuff, and there was some nice signal generators in there. And if
come on, don't get serious about these things.
I know. But there's a similar store that sells that sort of stuff.
So
in
what's the website address again?
www.edisposals.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Showtime. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
You can tell when it's a fairly quiet tech week out there, the Odd Spots and the gadgets get a bit of a good run. But this one, from the Melbourne Age, a Chinese businessman has advised on the internet for a stand-in mistress to be beaten up by his wife to vent her anger and protect his real mistress. Now, it goes from the sublime to the ridiculous, really, doesn't it? The internet, it's an amazing thing. So, the successful candidates would be 35 and originally from northeastern China. I'm glad he specified that. And she would be paid around about $400 for every 10 minutes.
Blonde, blue eyes.
Oh, dear.
Now, when technology goes that far down the gurgly, you've really got to stop and wonder, don't you?
Absolutely. If you've stopped and wondered, ring up and tell us about it. Any opinions on what we've talked about on the show or what we should talk about? And if we play it on the show, we'll send you a coffee mug. 1-300-664-882 and leave a message.
All right, thank you, Graham. And next week on the show, we have the top Russian himself, Eugene Kaspersky, talking about antivirus software and all that. And we took it to the streets. We asked people what they did. You probably heard a bit of a snippet in that in tonight's thing. Anton, thank you very much for coming in and sharing us some of your experiences in traveling the world and gadgets, and we'll be sure not to try and take our technology to the United States. Did you hear that, everybody over there?
My pleasure, and thank you.
All righty. Till the next time, it's bye for now.
Tech Talk Radio is brought to you each and every week by a band of dedicated professionals from within the broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer and host Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Sir Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Production facilities are courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night from 8 p.m. The producers wish to thank all the stations that are taking the show, including 3WBC, 3XX, Cairns FM and 4KZ. For syndication, sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit the website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.